has done incredible things to preserve your right to listen to programs like this, to read materials like are on my site and many others. And without Ted's work, I honestly don't know who would have been there to pick up the slack. So anyway, he's on tonight, and I want to welcome him back to the program as a great American. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, I have been raised as an evangelical Christian, and all of my life in the churches that I've attended, I've heard again and again the statement that Israel wants peace, the Jewish people in Palestine want peace, and the Arabs are the cause of terrorism, whether it's suicide bombings or rockets into Israel or whatever. It is the Arabs who initiate violence and terrorism, while Israel regretfully has to only respond with violence. And what I did in this Reader's recent article that you mentioned is I dig back into the history of Zionist-sponsored terror, and it truly is hair-raising. This is an unknown, unwritten chapter in our political climate and scene today, as the establishment media continues to hammer this idea that the source of terrorism is Islamofascism. They are the ones who are the aggressors, the fanatics, and so on, and peaceful Israel only responds. And I wrote an article, which you did post on your website last week, entitled Israel Founded on Terror. I believe you modified that headline a little bit. I'm glad you did. Founded and continuing on terror, I think, something like that.
Well, it's true. They continue to kill whenever they want to, as many as they want to, and the world yawns and looks the other way, if it looks at all.
Yes. Well, one of the great sources, which I think is very underutilized for a real understanding of the history of Zionism and the dark side of Zionism, is a huge two-volume work called The Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem. It's by Dr. Issa Nakala, who is a Christian a statesman and lawyer, and he compiled absolutely exhaustive records, largely from United Nations documents, from British archives in London, and so on, of exactly what happened, especially in the period from 1939 to 1948. And what we find there is that he documents about 500 violent or terrorist incidents against the Palestinians and the British occupation from between 1939 and 1948. We don't hear anything about that in our textbook or in our churches or in the media. And what he points out is that in 1944 especially, Zionist leaders in Israel were faced with two alternatives. You see, the British very magnanimously had given Palestine, under the British mandate, the Balfour Declaration, to the Zionists, at least a good portion of Israel, of Palestine, in 1917. But by 1944, the Zionists, under Ben-Gurion especially, were very anxious to throw off British rule. They were also anxious to get as many Arabs out of the country as they possibly could. And so there sprung up a real gangster terrorist. David Ben-Gurion was a real terrorist. Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Shamir, and then later Ariel Sharon. And they created these underground terrorist enforcement arms of Zionism in Palestine during the British occupation during the Second World War, which resorted to literally anything they could do, any outrage, any torture, any atrocity, in order to drive out the British and the Arabs.
Hmm. Well, the stories keep rolling in. Here's another one, just came in. Israel is going to build another 1,400 brand-new apartments in the West Bank and the disputed part of Jerusalem, officials announced. There's no stopping them. And you know who's paying for every one of those apartments, ladies and gentlemen? You. You are.
Incredible.
You have paid for the actual building of most of the state of Israel.
Yeah.
Well, and its weapons system, its nuclear arsenal, and all the rest of it.
Yes. I thought tonight we could have a resume of some of these forgotten atrocities by the state of Israel.
Right. And we have a break coming up in just a minute, but let's do that, Ted, when we come back. These atrocities are, of course, swept away, vacuumed up, and they need to be remembered. We can't be selective with how we review history. We've got to look at all of it or really none of it. We'll be right back with Ted Pike in just a couple minutes. Okay, I'm back with Ted Pike. All right, Ted, the true terrorism which begat the state of Israel, or at least the beginnings of it, let's memorialize some of those because they are history.
Yes. Before we do that, I'd like to just give a little introduction to the main terrorist players in this sordid drama. The first is the highest political body in Israel in 1944, which was the Jewish Agency. And this is kind of the visible, more respectable element of Zionist government under the mandate. And their role was to cooperate with the terrorists intimately and yet publicly disavow terrorism. You see, they were kind of taking the high road. And then there was Haganah, which is the popular Israeli resistance army resisting the British and the Arabs. And that was led by Ben-Gurion. That also was quite public and kind of in the upper echelon, but again, working very closely with terrorists, clandestine terrorists. And then there was Irgun, which was founded and run by Menachem Begin. And Irgun was a violently terrorist organization, as was the Stern Gang, basically directed by Yitzhak Shamir. And by the way, Ben-Gurion, Begin, Shamir, all of those people became ultimately became prime ministers of Israel. But one of the first atrocities which was committed under the direction of Yitzhak Shamir was the assassination of Lord Moyne, the British resident minister in Palestine in November of 1944. You see, what these terrorists were wanting to do was to create shockwaves, continually battering the British occupants of Palestine, wearing them down. The purpose of the shooting of Lord Moyne under the direction of Shamir was to begin the process of getting the British to reconsider their tenure in the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the infamous King David massacre, and this was the work of Menachem Begin in collusion with Ben-Gurion's Haganah. They worked closely. Begin's Irgun terrorists were able to get into the basement of the huge, enormous King David Hotel in Jerusalem with milk cans. They masqueraded as milkmen bringing milk to the cafeteria, and those milk cans were filled with gelignite, very high explosives, and they gave the hotel, I think, 20 minutes warning, and then they blew it up, murdering 92, and injuring many more. And the main reason they wanted to do this was to destroy British records that proved that the highest members of the Zionist government backed anti-British terrorism.
Well, they not only backed it, they funded it.
Yeah, absolutely. Another very low point was when several British sergeants were hanged in July 1947. We're getting closer toward independence for Israel.
Right.
Begin, Shamir, and Haganah authorized the kidnapping and hanging of two British sergeants, and they booby-trapped their bodies, and they mined the area of these hanging corpses in an orchard, and the first military person who came there was the bomb exploded in his face. And then during this time, about 1947, Shamir was also sending many letters and package bombs to British officials. And there were many, many cases. As I was mentioning earlier, there's something like 500 plus in the British archives in London of records of kidnappings, floggings of British soldiers, all kinds, every kind of terrorism. We're talking about ambushes. We're talking about just the whole gamut of every fiendish device that Begin and Shamir could come up with to drive out the British. In January 5th, 1948, Jewish agency leader, David Ben-Gurion, he was at that time head not only of Haganah but of the Jewish agency, they blew up the Semiramis Hotel in Jerusalem. Again, they violently stormed the hotel, and then they brought in their high explosives, and they blew up the whole hotel, killing 20 and wounding 17. And this was in an Arab area. The purpose was to terrorize the Arabs into fleeing Israel. You see, there are about 900,000 Arabs living in Israel proper at that time, Palestine, and it had just been generally agreed by Ben-Gurion and the rest of them that there could be no state of Israel with that large an Arab population. So what these people were trying to do was to put the fear into the Arabs with the hope of actually driving them out back into Arab lands. And then there's the infamous Deir Yassin massacre on April 9th, 1948. This is
Let's hold off on that one. That's one that will live in infamy. And we have another pause coming up here. But you mentioned the names, the key players. We also want to mention the obvious. They weren't acting independently of a higher authority.
No.
Okay? We have to remember that they were taking orders from some power center somewhere. This wasn't an extemporaneous ad lib kind of terrorism. This was all being done by great design. The same kind of design that literally presided over the execution of over 8 million German civilians between the years 1945 and 1953 in Europe. True story.
Yes.
Do your research. All right, back with Reverend Ted Pike, and we're going to talk about probably the most notorious of all the terrorist acts against humanity that lurk in the shadows of history. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes. Well, you see, by April 9th, 1948, this was only 5 weeks before the United Nations was going to create the State of Israel. And what the UN wanted to do, of course, was to partition Palestine into a Jewish half and basically an Arab half. It wasn't precisely half, but it was going to be a multi-state entity there. And this was absolutely unacceptable to Begin and Shamir and Ben-Gurion and the rest of them. And so what they wanted to do was to jump the gun and create such terror in the Arab population that the Arabs would literally flee the country and they couldn't create their own Palestinian state. And so on the morning of April 9th, 1948, Begin's Irgun soldiers came upon the peaceful sleeping village of Deir Yassin, a suburb of Jerusalem, and they wreaked havoc there, terrible, terrible atrocity for at least a day. One quote says that the 25 pregnant women were bayoneted in their abdomens while they were still alive, and 52 children were maimed under the eyes of their mothers, and then were slain and their heads cut off. The documentation on what happened to Deir Yassin is very extensive because, fortunately, a very reputable investigator for the International Red Cross arrived there on the next day, and he actually saw the remaining members of Irgun there, including beautiful young Irgun fighters who were still stabbing people in the belly and doing violence to them. And the Irgun fighters tried to hide some of the bodies. They stuffed something like 70 of them down in a well, but it all came out. And this is really one of the very, very well documented, uncontrovertible facts of history. Mm-hmm. The National Geographic has done articles on it, and nobody can deny it. And in fact, Menachem Begin was actually proud of what he did. He considered Deir Yassin absolutely vital, strategically vital, for the founding of the State of Israel, because it was necessary to create such terror, such carnage, that the reputation of the ferocity of Irgun and the ferocity of the Zionists would quickly spread throughout the Arabs in Palestine. And in fact, the Irgun put loudspeakers on trucks, and they drove all throughout the region blaring out in Arabic that unless all the Arabs in Palestine fled Palestine, leaving their olive orchards, their businesses, their homes and farms, then exactly what had happened at Deir Yassin would happen to them as well. And as a result of this, a tremendous panic seized eventually 800,000 Arabs who fled to the north into Lebanon and east into Transjordan and so on. So this was part of their grand design to not only evacuate the British, but evacuate all Arabs from Palestine.
Well, they're close to doing it now. They've got them pretty well bottled up, what's left of the Arab population, the Palestinians. If you've seen the maps showing Palestine in 1948 and Palestine today, it's appalling. And again, I don't know how many United Nations resolutions the Zionist State of Israel has flaunted or absolutely refused to pay any attention to. I think it's over 60 now, something like that. They do what they want to do.
Yes.
They're answerable to no one. They are heavily entrenched in international geopolitical intrigue on almost every level you can imagine. This is all being, it's not, remember, this doesn't emanate from Tel Aviv. This comes from the globalist Illuminati elite. Many are Jews, many are not. This whole issue of Zionism hiding behind the Judaic religion is another thing that needs to be looked at carefully.
Yes, it certainly does.
They are continually doing harm to Jews all around the world, these Zionists. And if you read Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl's paper, he wrote it in 1948. He was the man during the war that could have gotten all the Jews released from occupied Europe with only $3 million. He went from Germany to Switzerland and asked world Zionists for $3 million to get all the Jews out. This is 1942-43.
Yes.
And the Zionists told him, forget it, go home. We're not going to give you anything. A lot of people are going to have to die in this war so we can more easily establish Israel after the war. So the Zionists sacrificed the Jews in the war to the horrors of the Holocaust.
This is
the bottom line. And read what the Jews say about this. Don't listen to me. I didn't write it. Rabbi Wiesmandl did, and there were many others who write about this. So
yes.
Do your research. That's all I can tell you. While you still can, folks.
Well, you know, most people don't really understand what happened after Deir Yassin. They know that there was a mass panic out of Palestine. But the truth is that following Deir Yassin, the Jewish forces, we're talking about Haganah, we're talking about Irgun, Sturgeon Gang, basically the whole Zionist establishment went into all of the towns of Palestine, and the Jewish soldiers told the Palestinian residents that they were going to have to flee their homes, and they would basically be shot if they did not. And what they said to many inhabitants of Arab towns was that this was a time of national emergency. The forces of the Arab world were invading, and they needed to be moved out of the country in case of war and so on. And basically they were saying that for security reasons, these people would have to leave their homes temporarily. They could come in after things settled down, but of course that's not how it worked out. The thousands, hundreds of thousands fled up into these refugee camps to the north, especially, and to the east, and over into Jordan. And what happened was that they tried to come back, but lo and behold, they found an entrenched Israeli bureaucracy which would not process their appeals to be repatriated and restored to their property and so on. And that literally has been the predicament of these Palestinians to this very hour. And so there was tremendous carnage and bloodshed and theft and rape and everything as more than 800,000 Palestinians were exited from the country, leaving only about 100,000. And those, tragically, were also discriminated against, became a discriminated subclass in modern Israeli society. So we're talking about here we have the reason, the seminal reason for the whole conflict in the Middle East today. This outrage has never been forgotten.
Okay, talking with Reverend Ted Pike about history and it goes on today. Look at the stories, those that you can find. You won't find them on the front page of the L.A. Times very often, or the New York Times. But the slaughter continues. Little children shot through the head, old people shot. Old man was 70-year-old man, 80-year-old man, I don't know, he was shot last week. And the Israeli soldiers kept the ambulances away for 2 hours until he bled to death. Then they let them pass. This is not right. This is not human behavior. Be right back. Okay, and talking to Reverend Ted Pike. Yeah, Ted, it was pretty ugly, and it remains so to this day. A human life is a human life. This is an equal opportunity morning program. We value all living beings as equal in worth, at least when they start out as children. Some of them turn into hideously evil monsters who, as adults, quite frankly, the planet would be better off without.
Yes. You know, Jeff, I should mention, there might be some evangelicals listening to me tonight, and I know that they're not probably believing what I'm saying here tonight. And they should come to my website, truthtellers.org, and right on the homepage is this very article I'm reading from here tonight. Israel founded on terror, and I have a very extensive footnotes.
Right, it's in my featured stories as well. It's about fourth or fifth down. It says facts are facts, and there's your story right there. And
wonderful.
So it's right there.
Yes. I'll just run through very quickly some more of these atrocities. These are buried in history. They're unbelievable. But very quickly, on September 17th, that's after independence, the United Nations was working hard to try to salvage their plan to create a two-state solution in Palestine. And so Shamir and his Stern gang shot the UN mediator, Count Folke Bernadotte. And then on October 29th, 1948, in the fall, Israeli soldiers killed between 80 and 100 men, women, and children in Dawaima, a suburb of Haifa. They locked them in their houses and blew them sky high, all of them. And the purpose of this was to, again, intensify the terror and the reputation for atrocity and merciless terror generated by Deir Yassin to literally cleanse the whole land of Arabs, compelling, as there was tension between Egypt, you know, the Suez Crisis and so on, and there was threatened war between Israel and Egypt. The Israeli IDF forces wanted to make an example out of a Palestinian town in central Israel, and let all the Arabs in Israel know that they would tolerate no sympathies with the Egyptians. So they gave a curfew order to this town that everybody was supposed to be in their houses by 5 o'clock. Well, most of the village was off at work. And so when 5 o'clock arrived and people came home, they machine-gunned down 51 of these returning Arabs, with 17 with massive injuries. And again, this was Israel's way of letting the Arab world know that they would countenance no siding with the Egyptians. And then we are all familiar with the massacre of the USS Liberty, when on the orders of Moshe Dayan, Israeli fighters and torpedo boats left 34 dead American sailors and 171 wounded. And then one incident that is not widely known is the Libyan airline massacre on February 21st, 1973. A Libyan commercial airliner was having some kind of mechanical problems, and it strayed over the Sinai, over Israeli-controlled territory, and four Israeli jets were scrambled. They came up. They identified it very clearly at close range and shot it down, killing 106, and the purpose of this was to flex Zionist power against Libya. And then many people today can remember the massacres in the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in Beirut, Lebanon, just after the Beirut invasion of 1982, when again General Ariel Sharon and Yitzhak Shamir, in cooperation with the so-called Christian Phalangist forces, it seals all the exits of this very populist refugee camps in Lebanon, and Sharon and Shamir provided aerial flares illuminating the slaughter of up to 2,750 men, women, and children. And this was according to a body count by the Committee of the Red Cross. Now, what is said here tonight does not include the saturation bombing of the Palestinian camps in Tyre and Sidon, where something like more than 19,000 innocent men, women, and children were blown to pieces. And then, of course, we have the recent invasion of Lebanon a year or so ago, and even what's happening in Gaza right now several weeks ago.
Ted, the agenda has never changed. It is
no.
The genocide of the Palestinian Arab population.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was the 2002 invasion, again under the control of Ariel Sharon, into the West Bank,
right,
where terrible carnage was documented. Our Apache helicopters, which we gave to Israel, just rained down the hellfire missiles on these towns like Jenin, just blowing them, leveling them to the ground. And the tanks would come up and they would shoot their cannons literally right through the towns, just going through perhaps dozens of houses inhabited by Palestinians. Something like more than 4,500 young men and up to age 50 were rounded up.
Mm-hmm.
Professionals, doctors, lawyers, intellectuals, they were all rounded up and put in prisons and so on. And nobody really knows the death count from the 2000 invasion because Sharon refused to let the Western media in to document it.
Right. All true.
Yeah.
All
now,
true.
Some people may quickly object, saying, well, the Arabs, you know, the Arabs are the terrorists. You know, they have the suicide bombers, they have sending the rockets into Israel and so on. It is true there has been some Arab violence over the last century. There was a massacre of Jews in Hebron in 1929, and then there was a general Arab revolt in Palestine beginning in 1936, and some Arab indignities and terrorism perhaps during the 1948 war. And, of course, we have suicide bombings. We have these acts of extremists and fanatical patriots, if you want to call them that, but taking things much farther than even our humanity can condone. But nevertheless, I ask in this question, who is it most at fault? Consider this. What if someone claiming a divine right to occupy your house and land drives you from them, condemning you and your children to a distant Arab concentration camp for generations? Would you resort to violence? And I say in this article there is only one word that describes the one who would displace you. He is an aggressor. And the Palestinians, fanatical and terrorist, as many have become, are nevertheless defenders of ancient rights and territories that have been horrifically violated. Victims. They are victims hitting back.
We see the same thing in Iraq and the same thing in Afghanistan, and these people are defending their homeland. That's just the way it is.
Yes.
It's a very human response. No killing is condonable, and it's not supposed to be this way. Israel was supposed to, and their charter, their agreement, they were supposed to set up shop and live and let live. Just it never really was in the cards.
Yes. Well, you know, after the Third Reich was deposed at the end of the Second World War, these war criminals of Germany all were hung and buried under the contempt of humanity. But isn't it something that Shamir and Begin and Ben-Gurion and Sharon all rose to premiership of the nation? This shows that they had the support of the Jewish people in Palestine during this whole period. And the whole nation was assenting to be very hard-handed, high-handed and hard and cruel behavior toward the Palestinians. And recent polls in Israel are also showing there's a very, very great anger and a willingness. Even this week, some notable rabbis in Israel are calling for more violence, more extreme hardening of Israelis' hearts against the Arab people. And shamefully, evangelicals have have given uninterrupted support to all of these
Ted,
very wicked men.
We have a minute left. Can you answer quickly why 30 to 35 million Christian evangelicals in this country so blindly support Israeli genocide against the Palestinian people? Why?
Well, they have a misguided idea, misinterpretation of Scripture, that because God promised the land to Abraham and his obedient, kind, godly descendants, that any Jew who wants to come in there, even if he's a Bolshevik or an anarchist or a terrorist, they believe anyone who claims to be a Jew can come in there and displace the Palestinians because he's one of God's chosen people. This is a tremendous misinterpretation of Scripture, a perversion of God's law, and a perversion of the true purpose, I believe, of a holy land, which God meant to be a place of righteousness and justice and peace.
For all peoples.
Yes.
Well, it's a mess over there, and it's not getting any better. Ted, thank you again for all your work to help us preserve our Constitution and our right to free speech here, and for writing that very important article and for the information tonight. Thanks very much, Ted.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Reverend Ted Pike, and again, things to think about. You make up your own minds, but always remember, don't just read material that makes you feel good. There are a lot of things out there that are not pleasant, but they've got to be considered in order to come up with a truly balanced viewpoint in the end. All right, we'll be back in 21 hours. In the meantime, we'll see you at Rents.com. Take care.